I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Hooney Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
We didn't really have any mentors ahead of us. I mean, the mentors we had ahead of us were European chefs who worked and worked from 13 to 70 till their knees went out and they couldn't work anymore.
And drank a case of
beer
on the line.
And drank themselves to death.
Yeah.
We have to kind of set the next stage for ourselves and for each other. And we know, as I said earlier, we can't just work, you know, nonstop in a restaurant kitchen. So we have to create new opportunities and new things for ourselves to do, both financially and creatively.
That is legendary pastry chef Emily Lucchetti, our guest today on Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. I hope you're all doing okay out there. I hope you're having a good week. Our guest today is Chef Emily Lucchetti. Emily is a pastry chef who's been associated with a number of Bay Area restaurants over the years, including Jeremiah Tower's landmark restaurant, Stars, and more recently, restaurants like Marlowe, Park Tavern, and The Cavalier. She's with us today to talk not about pastry, but about her book, So Who's Counting? And I'll properly introduce Emily and the book in just a moment. But first, we are doing an awareness drive right now. As you probably know, there are more podcasts than ever out there, and they don't stop coming. There is no let up. So we are fighting for oxygen by asking listeners to please tell a friend about Andrew Talks to Chefs. Last week, we asked you to put a young, aspiring cook onto the show. This week, we're asking you to please let a non-industry friend know about it. These would be people who don't cook professionally, but are fascinated by the chef world. Maybe they loved Anthony Bourdain's books and television shows, or the writings of somebody like Gabrielle Hamilton, or maybe they just love dining out and reading chef cookbooks and chef memoirs. But if there's a person out there in your life who fits that description in any way, and you think they would enjoy the deep dive interviews we do on this show, we'd appreciate it if you would please put them onto it. That would be doing us a solid. Also, you can support Andrew Talks to Chefs by visiting our andrewtalkstochefs.com website and or by reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. As of last week, I still can't quite believe this, but we are among the top four results that come up if you search for the word chef on Apple Podcasts. Now, I don't know the exact algorithm they use, but I can assure you that I'm not pulling down the numbers that a superstar with a podcast like, say, David Chang is. So I'm confident saying that a huge factor in that result is the ratings and reviews that you all have been entering at Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. I'm sure we're similarly represented elsewhere, but not nearly in the numbers we are on Apple Podcasts. So thank you for that. And if you haven't gotten around to it yet, and you have a minute even just to do a rating, which takes about as long as it takes to rate, say, an Uber driver, we'd really appreciate it. Okay, thanks for indulging all of that. Our guest today, as I said, is Emily Lucchetti. I recorded this interview with Emily last summer in Madison Square Park in New York City. It was going to be one of our mystery guest intros to an episode, but then we ended up taking an unexpected hiatus in the fall as we were moving away from our former host network toward becoming the independent show we are now. So this was part of the backlog that we accidentally ran up during that time, and I decided I would run this interview on its own. One reason is I thought it would be an interesting experiment. People are always telling me that podcasts should only be about 30 minutes in length. Mine typically run at least double that, which, to be honest, is how I like it, and I don't see that changing. But I'll be interested to see if more people listen when they see the 30-some-minute runtime as opposed to, you know, an hour 15, hour 30 minutes. So that'll be of interest to me. Anyway, eventually Emily and I will do a proper deep dive biographical interview, but I had invited her on specifically last year to talk about a, at the time, relatively new book that she co-wrote with Aaron McHugh. And the book is called So Who's Counting? The Little Quote Book About Growing Older and Still Kicking Ass. It's a small, breezy, high-energy book by somebody who I think at age 60 at the time has figured a lot of stuff about life out, who has an amazing attitude and outlook. I'm about 10 years younger than Emily, but I think I am on my way or was in, am in sync with a lot of her sort of philosophies about life and how to handle it as you start getting north of the big 5-0. So I think this is kind of a fun conversation, actually, of a topic that maybe, I don't know, younger listeners, maybe you think this isn't for you, but I would argue that it is. There's also a little bit of interesting chef history in here and some observations about how the profession tends to treat its practitioners as they get older. So I hope everybody will give it a listen and maybe even get her book. It's an inexpensive book. It's a small book. It's a book that can be leafed through in one shot or at your leisure or whenever the spirit strikes you. We get into all that in this conversation. I don't think I need to say anything else about it, except that because I thought this was going to be a mystery guest show introduction with Emily, the show starts again at the top of our conversation. So please do not be confused when you hear me greet you again in about 5 seconds. Okay, with that, my conversation with Chef Emily Lucchetti. Here you go. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I'm your host, Andrew Friedman, and I'm once again here with a mystery co-host. Say hello, mystery co-host.
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay. Should we flip all the cards? You are... I'll give some clues. People can guess in the comfort of their home. You
I
are,
love doing this when I listen to your show. I love trying to guess who it is.
Oh, do you actually try?
Oh, yeah. I try for sure.
So you are a well-known pastry chef.
Yes.
You are at least professionally based in the Bay Area and have been for a long time.
Yes.
You are the author of or co-author of several books.
Yes.
And I'll give one other clue. You were the original pastry chef of Stars.
No, actually, I wasn't.
You weren't?
I was the third.
What?
I was the third.
I thought when you got made pastry chef, it was a new position.
No, it was. I was the third. I switched from the savory side.
Yes, I knew that.
Yeah, I switched. I was the third.
This is why, you know, I get asked once in a while, why didn't you put a family tree in your book? And I'm like, because I inevitably will make mistakes on something like that.
Well, the family.
I would only do something like that in an interactive way.
Yeah, families can't even do family trees right.
Exactly, exactly. So it's going to be an apple off in the in the orchard. Yeah. So you are Emily Lucchetti.
That's me.
That's you. That's and I'm thrilled to have you here. We're kind of pals. We met. Do you remember how we met?
I remember how we met. I got a call. I don't remember who it was from. I think it was Kathy Langley said.
Yes.
There's someone that needs a ride from San Francisco to Yosemite. And I was going up for Yosemite Chef Cooks, and you were going up to moderate your first group.
To moderate Chef's Holidays.
And so
at
I said,
what used
sure.
to be called the Iwani.
Yeah.
Which I still call the Iwani.
I'll call the Iwani till long past I'm no longer on this
it's
earth.
It's the nice hotel in Yosemite. It's now
it's the
called,
one where the Queen Elizabeth stayed.
Yes. And is rumored to be, you'll find different answers to this, the inspiration for the look of the Overlook Hotel in the Stanley Kubrick version of The Shining.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
That's a good piece of trivia.
Yeah. You'll find incorrect trivia here and there saying it was filmed there, which it was not. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, and we
I don't
just,
really see it, to be honest.
Yeah,
but.
I don't see it either. And we just like talked the whole way up about food.
Yeah, you gave me an interview for my book.
Yeah.
We did an interview for my blog, my poor neglected blog, and that was like a four-hour venture. Sure. By the end of it, we were like pals.
Yeah, and there was no snow. We didn't get snowed out. Or
I don't
in.
Remember that year.
Yeah.
There are years up there where it's like 60 degrees the
whole
time.
I know, and then there are years you can't get out. So.
Okay, so we're going to, at some point in the future, do a full-on biographical interview.
Yeah.
As you and I talked before we did this today, I got a backlog, and I want to get you
backlog's
closer to when
thing.
I would actually run it. But you have a book that's was released not all that long ago.
Yeah, April. So just 3 months. Well, it's now, the end of June?
Yep.
So,
but you co-wrote it with Aaron McHugh.
Yep.
And, who's in publishing.
She's in publishing. Yep. Yeah.
And the title is?
So Who's Counting? The Little Quote Book About Growing Older and Still Kicking Ass.
Okay.
And it was funny because it was like people are like, well, why did you write that book? It has nothing to do with food. And there is one quote in there, though, I'll digress for a sec, that says, age is no of no importance unless you're a cheese. So that it yeah, does, there is something about food in there. But, you know, I turned 60, and all of a sudden I just started hearing all these stupid, or paying attention to, all these stupid self-deprecating jokes about getting older and not being able to keep up. And I felt like I'm at my prime now. You know, I'm feeling better. I know so many people. I don't give a shit about what people think anymore. Right. You know, so I felt like I'm not going anywhere. Right. You know, so yeah. Let's fight back. The glass is half full, not half empty, you know.
So let me ask you, first of all, you know, when people say, why'd you write that? And you just made a face when you say that. So I'm in my early 50s now, and I don't know what I thought 50 was going to feel like, but I play tennis as well as I've ever played it. I play tennis routinely with people, gosh, probably about half my age. I hang out with people 20 years younger than I am. I'm often the last person standing at the end of some of those nights. But I also take care of myself. And I also, as you just said, I do feel like once you get around, I guess 50 is probably the marker. Uh-huh. I feel like that's when you start to make a choice about whether you're going to be old or not. Because I, like, nothing's changed about my life in the last 2 years.
No, it's so true.
You and I were talking. I just took my second guitar lesson ever. That's a new thing I'm doing. I work out like a beast. I feel awesome. And I refuse, as you were saying, the self-deprecating thing. Yeah. I am so not interested in people talking about their maladies. I don't do that. I don't. And I actually have some.
Yeah, we all do.
No, but I mean, I have some that aren't even related to age. But I do think at some point it does start to become a choice of everything.
It does. It becomes a choice. And also, when you do get a little bit older, you start to prioritize. And it's not even necessarily like, what do I want to do on this bucket list for the next 20 years or 30 years, whatever I've left. It's more like, how do I want to live my life? There's no dress rehearsal. Right. This is really it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the food world, you're surrounded by younger people all the time.
Yeah.
So when you're constantly looking in the faces of 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, you think you're just 20 and 30. You know, I think everyone is a mental age in their head.
Yes.
I'm like 28 when I just switched to pastry.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So so then all of a sudden it's like, wow. And it was funny because Kim Severinsen called me up and she was writing.
New York Times writer.
New York Times writer. And she was writing a piece on Thomas Keller and his legacy, because he had turned 60 or recently or whatever. So it was a print article. I opened up the New York Times and it said, Emily Lucchetti, comma, 60, comma. And when you see it in print for the first time, you're like, holy shit, you know. And that was like, thank you, Kim Severinsen, for like slapping me across the head with it.
Yeah.
But it's so, I really think it's a state of mind. It really, really is. And you get smarter about what things you want to do and what things you don't do. And like, I can't, you know, cook for 14 hours in a restaurant kitchen anymore. On the one hand, parts of me always miss it because you get such a high, you get such an adrenaline, and it's so much fun. But on the other hand, if you do that, you can't do so many other things. So you just have to understand it as kind of a passage.
Sure.
Yeah. But not a passage into nothingness.
Well, first of all, I have to put this in terms that may be slightly cliched, but I find them to be true. I've mentioned it on the show before. You are, you know, your professional base for a long time has been California. And I will say, I feel like people stay in kitchens in California a lot longer into their life than they do almost anywhere else. I believe it's because, in general, the lifestyle there, that's a word I usually don't like to use, but it is accurate, is so tilted toward not even, you know, mountain biking or...
Yeah.
But if you're in California, you know, a lot of people just naturally, if you're in California, you know, I think of our mutual friend, Mary Sue Milliken.
Yeah.
You know, I think of these people I know who, you know, every time I go on social media, they're like on a mountain bike or, you know, or they're hiking or we just did a live show in San Francisco and Pretty Mystery was on and she's at between jobs right now. And I said, are you exercising more? She's like, I hike. You know, I hike all the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something about California that just the way it is there that enables people to not get so beaten up by the job. Do you think that's fair?
No, I think it's fair. I think some of it is the beauty of California and the fact that there's so much outdoors around and you can easily go out and take a hike or a walk and within 20 minutes of your house. And so, and with the weather and it's nice all year, you don't have the thing of being trapped inside an apartment in New York City and then trying to have to jumpstart yourself again in the spring to try to get into good habits. It's just, you're kind of always, always outside.
Right. Yeah.
And it is. And I think it is something where people just incorporate it into their day-to-day lives, and it's a habit.
My theme song and break music is from After School Specials album Double Barrel Single Entendre, which is available on iTunes. Welcome back to the show. I will get you back to the rest of my conversation with Emily Lucchetti in just a moment. Just a couple of quick housekeeping notes. As a lot of you might know, I got my start in writing by collaborating with chefs on their cookbooks. And this week's post on our Tokeland blog, which lives at the AndrewTalksToChefs.com website, is titled Confessions of a Cookbook Collaborator. I give a little insight into what that very specific, sometimes strange, often very entertaining and fun profession is all about, and maybe some fun details you haven't read anywhere else before. I hope you will give it a look. Also, on our appearances page on the site, you can find out where to see me in the coming weeks. I've just added a couple of appearances. I will be speaking to the Culinary Historians of Washington. That's Washington, D.C. The talk is actually in Bethesda, Maryland. That will be on Sunday, March 8th. It is open to the public. That information is on the site. And I will also be back. I was there last year for their first one, and I had a great time at the Chef's Roll Second Annual Anti-Convention in San Diego on April 6th and 7th. And I'm not speaking there, but I will be at the Philly Chef Conference March 1st and 2nd. So if you're going to be there, please keep an eye out. And if you see me and you're a listener, please say hello. Nothing would make me happier. Okay, I think that's it. Now let's finish up our conversation with the great Emily Lucchetti. I hope you enjoy the rest of it. So how'd you go about writing the book? You break it up into a couple of sections.
We broke it up into different chapters, and one's called Looking Forward, Looking Back, one's called Laughter, one's called Words of Wisdom, one's called, what are some of the other ones, Silver Linings, just different things like that. And we researched a whole bunch of different quotes. Like, we basically just go on the internet and look up quotes and find them and find which ones were interesting and which ones spoke to us. And then, you know, it's interesting because then you have to go back and find the original source, because we didn't find anything. We didn't use anything unless we could attribute it to the original author. Yeah, because you do find a lot of crap out there that it's like you think 10 people said it, but then you realize none of them said it.
And sometimes you find quotes that are just slightly the common understand. There's a quote in the book from Arnold Palmer, "The more I practice, the luckier I get." Now, I've heard my entire life, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." Yeah. Now, I'm sure that is actually a bastardization of the Arnold Palmer quote, which I had never seen.
Yeah.
Or seen that attributed, you know?
Yeah. Another one I like was Gloria Steinem. Is people keep asking her if she's going to pass her torch. And she said, "No, thank you very much. I'm keeping my torch and I'm using it to light the torches of others." It's like, don't roll. You don't have to roll over.
I would break up the whole thing into two pieces. I feel like what your book mostly addresses is the sort of philosophical point of view, the mental part.
Right.
Just not lapsing into all these things that people lapse into, which I have to say, as I get a little older myself, I do. You know, years ago I was at that, actually it's funny coincidence, I was at the Chef's Holidays at the Awani Hotel, and Jonathan Waxman was there, and he came over to me and said, "Andrew, how old are you?" And I said, I was 46, something like that. And he goes, "All right, listen, I got to tell you, this was, by the way, apropos of nothing," which is very Jonathan. He goes, you got to make a choice. You're about the age. You got to make a choice. Do you want to be old or do you not?" He said, "I have friends who are like overweight and da, da, da." And he goes, "And I have friends who, like, they're cut, you know, like I have this friend, she's a runner and this and that."
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, and that always stayed, not that that was the thing.
The other thing I think is interesting is that for all of the chefs that are in their 50s and 60s that were really part of the original American Revolution of food, we didn't really have any mentors ahead of us. I mean, the mentors we had ahead of us were European chefs who worked and worked from 13 to 70 till their knees went out and they couldn't work anymore.
And drank a case of beer on the line.
And drank themselves to death.
Yeah.
And so we really... we have to kind of set the next stage for ourselves and for each other. And we know, as I said earlier, we can't just work, you know, nonstop in a restaurant kitchen. So we have to create new opportunities and new things for ourselves to do, both financially and creatively. You know, and unfortunately, you have to start thinking about that when you're 40. Because if you don't, then by the time 50 sneaks around and you want to get out, you don't have an exit plan.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I sort of feel like they're going to figure out one day that, like, dropping acid in your youth is like good for longevity or something. I mean, the number of people of that generation, like, very few of those, like, most of the main figures are still around. They're still working,
oh,
like,
I know.
40 years, 50 years after their debut. You know, there's very few who have, like, shuffled off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's kind of remarkable. I mean, relatively speaking,
it is
a very extant population.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And, you know, you look at people like Patrick O'Connell, who just won the Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah. He was funny because I sent him a copy of the book, and he's like, oh, good. He goes, this Lifetime Achievement thing was wigging me out a little bit. And I said, yeah, that's the problem when you get that kind of award and you're still alive.
Were you at the Beards?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, we didn't see each other, though, did we? I don't think we did. I went for the first time in Chicago. Yeah. I'd never been to the Chicago edition.
He's an amazing guy. And talk about someone who's constantly reinventing, not himself, but just tweaking what he does down there in Washington.
I was just there for the first time. And there was a visiting group of journalists, but I believe this is actually the case. He was there.
Oh, he's there.
He was
there
until, like, midnight. And when I left the restaurant, there's a table that he likes to sit at. He was sitting there with this woman, Bonnie, who's kind of like his...
Bonnie Moore.
Yeah, his PR...
She's a chef, too.
She used to be a sous chef there.
Yeah, she was very involved with women chefs and restaurateurs.
Yeah, so Bonnie and Bob...
Bob Foss,
the three of them were sitting down to dinner, you know? And he was, like, all lit up. And,
yeah.
I mean, this guy's, like, 74, I think.
Within
a year or two.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of amazing. But I think the book deals mostly with the philosophical attitude.
Yeah.
Attitude?
Yeah. No, and I do. And I think I wanted it to be something that was fun and light and inspirational. Like, people said, are you going to do another one? I said, I'm not going to become an anti-aging expert. I don't want to do that. To a certain extent, it's boring talking about aging. But on the other hand... I wanted to create a little book you could just open it up and laugh or get a little inspiration from and then just put it down and go on with your day, whatever your day is.
It is strictly quotes.
Yeah.
It is very breezy.
Quotes. Yeah. Yeah. Good gift book. And also what I laughed is like
book.
When the book was done, it was like, oh my God, I didn't have to go into the kitchen once. I didn't have to test a recipe.
Right.
I didn't have to wash a dish.
Yeah.
I didn't have to clean any aprons.
Yeah.
So
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. It is a topic that I kind of feel like this is more of a guy thing for some reason, but are you now or have you ever been kind of interested in observing, you know, like celebrities, musicians, athletes who seem to age especially well? Like, I see someone like Mick, I know people make fun of the Rolling Stones, but Mick Jagger is a freak of nature.
He is.
Springsteen is a freak of nature.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain actors Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
No, and what's the deal with that guy?
Well, I think he had a little work done, which nothing wrong with that.
Whatever.
But the thing is, like, talk about Mick Jagger, someone like who abused his body probably more than Bruce Springsteen ever did.
Yes, one, but not as much as Keith Richards.
Yeah, with the jumping around stage that he did and the drug. It's like when you know, it's like you just want to see a slice inside that guy's brain, just chemically and genetically.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, everyone should be taking what he's taking.
It's amazing to me. But do you take note when you see that? And if so, is that a new thing?
No.
Or not so much?
I think as far as the age thing, it's a new thing. I might have noticed it from afar, but I probably didn't relate as much to it, where my whole career I've kind of, you know, people say, well, who are your mentors? And you have specific maybe food mentors, but I also looked at anyone that was successful in life. They didn't even have to be doing anything related with food. It's like, oh, how are they running their lives? How are they successful? So you can kind of glean and learn something off of everybody. So you see someone like, you know, as you said, Mick Jagger or Bruce Springsteen, and how they evolve. That's the thing that I think is so interesting, how they evolve in their what they're doing, and not just physically, but what they're doing and how they change, you know, if they're doing, you know, big theater, you know, productions, and then they do one, you know, Concerts Unplugged, and then they go back to the studio and record something when they haven't recorded an album in 20 years. I think that's the kind of thing that I find fascinating.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. It's funny, as I say this, I'm going in a few weeks to see Elvis Costello, my hero, And
haven't you seen him like a zillion times in concert?
You got a good, probably 30 now.
Yeah, I remember talking about this.
Yeah,
once.
I still show up.
That's good. That's amazing.
But he's co-billing with Blondie, and I can't wait. I can't. Deborah Harry.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope she's. I hope she can still bring it.
Hope she can still get into her like shiny silver pants.
But when you do think back, or even when you think about cooks you know, younger, you were talking about looking in the faces of these younger cooks, you know, there have been these articles, which again, I find these, I find them sad. You know, I love Mark Peel, but there was a piece in the Times a couple of years ago where it showed his like stretching exercise.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you see these, like there's that television series with Michael Douglas and, you know, on Netflix, the series about the two guys, you know, who getting older. And it's like, just have no interest in that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to do with a pastry chef friend of mine, two ladies trying not to get fat
instead of
two fat ladies.
Right. But what, when you see these cooks, like what's the, what advice would you give specifically to people who work in a kitchen? Is there anything?
I do. I say, go out and get massages.
Oh, that's a good one.
Change your shoes.
You mean buy new shoes?
Or just, you know, wear one day, wear one shoe, another day, wear a different kind of
shoes. Yeah.
Just because that keeps your feet all whatever. And just, you know, and it is a business that you do abuse your body, but as they say, it's better than sitting. So just, you know, be smart about it and take care of what you can.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
The other piece of advice, and you didn't ask this, but it just comes to mind because I read about it yesterday. I was reading about some pastry chef, and she's like, I'm trying to do something different. I'm trying to recreate the classics. And I felt like saying, well, what do you think the rest of us, Claudia, myself, Sherry, everybody, why do you think we've been doing for the last 30 years? So I think she's right, and she is trying to reinterpret it, but don't think that whatever you do is the newest thing.
Yeah.
It's probably been done before, which doesn't mean you shouldn't do it, but just understand where stuff come from and then take it to the, you know, the next level. So that's kind of, I know that's a whole nother thing that really has nothing to do with aging. That's a whole nother 45-minute discussion.
That's a whole thing. But, you know, I don't mind a tangent. I had this talk off mic with O'Connell a few weeks ago. We had finished the interview and we were talking. And, you know, I know there's a lot of dismay among chefs, let's say, north of 40, 45, about, you know, the lack of knowledge there is about, you know, the chefs who have come and gone, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I even remember meeting Charlie, or not meeting, I'd met him before, but going to spend some time with Charlie Trotter the year before he died. And last summer his restaurant was open, and he was like, you know, people don't know who Paul Bocuse is, and they don't know who Alfred Portale is. And like, my point of view, I mean, I do find that a little sad, but I do feel like, the more I've thought about it, as I've kind of been forced to the last few years, I actually feel like that's understandable. Unlike, because restaurants are unique. When the restaurants go away, like you worked at Stars. That's a seminal restaurant. It's probably one of the most important 15, 20 restaurants of the last half century in the United States. Okay. But it's not there anymore. You can't go there.
You can't relate.
You can't eat the food. If you look at the cookbook, it looks like a freaking antique, as they all do.
Yeah.
Cookbooks age really poorly.
Yeah.
Cookbooks, like fashion, age on like 5-year generations.
Yeah. Even if they're classic and they're not dated, they still age.
The first thing I ever worked on was the Gotham Bar and Grill cookbook, and I pulled it off the shelf a few months ago for the first time in a while, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, it's only 20 years old. Yeah.
Well, and I think two things. I think one, it happens in every profession, but this is a profession too that it's rooted on classics, but it's also rooted on creativity and what's, you know, and taking things to the next level. So the people are going to be, you know, more forgotten, you know, in the past. But I think it's, you know, it's also, it is, and I think a lot of chefs have been doing this. They're saying to their young cooks, these are who these people are. And you have to remember. And when I think about, like I mentioned, the American Revolution and growing up in my career and being part of that, I feel sorry for the young cooks because they weren't there firsthand to see it.
Yeah.
Because it's not their fault. It's like saying you didn't know when our fathers went to World War II or something. It's like, unless you were there, you really can't explain it.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault, you know.
Right. But I do think instead of having this attitude of this, again, I think this is general, a way to not, I say this, my new refrain is things change.
They've
got
to sure
accept
do.
That
yeah.
things change.
Yeah.
And people who don't start to sound like cranky old people.
They do.
And
they
as opposed
about old
to
people.
Saying
yeah.
as opposed to saying to younger cooks, listen, this is why it's important.
Yeah.
Here's a couple of people I think you might benefit from reading up on. Here's some people you remind me of. Yeah. You know, and you might want to read about it. You might relate to them. You might get a sense of where you come from professionally. Yep. You know, that's I think that is a constructive way to approach it.
Yeah, for sure.
They may, and a lot of them will go, are interested and will go look at it. But I think it's perfectly natural that people who were born after a place ceased to exist
wouldn't have any interest in it, or just wouldn't know,
or maybe they'd heard of it, but like, what are you going to do? You can't, it's not, you can't go to a museum and see it. You can't rent it. Yeah. You can't order it up on Netflix.
Yeah, it's not there.
It's not there anymore.
But I actually
am very sympathetic
to
the people on the younger end of this equation who are constantly being harangued as if they're just intellectually lazy.
Well, that's
part of being, because they're not.
They're not. And that's part of being, of when you're older, you need to stay young like that, because sometimes if I hear a lot of my friends and people I know either in the food world or other thing, and I'll say to them, you're sounding like a cranky old person, you know, I don't want to be around that.
I hate it. You know, I hate it. I really hate it. Like, again, I feel like I'm right on that. Yeah. I think I'm right. Right. 50 is kind of like, I think that's the line where you start making, you're just choosing up sides.
But I don't know. When I turned 50, it was a real conscious thing of, I don't take things personally anymore, even the things I should take personally.
So well, that's part the beauty of it. That's the great
thing.
That's
the beauty of it. That's the silver lining.
Well, I was just talking to someone recently. Yes, I have stopped. If somebody's if there's a toxic relationship in my life, I just walk away.
Yeah,
I don't even need to tell them.
And you do, but you also don't even fester in your mind and spend a lot of time analyzing. Should I keep it? Should I go? It's like, nah, this isn't working. I'm out of here.
Well, don't you feel like there's I don't know how this is kind of. I'm sure someone's written about this more eloquently than I'm about to say it. But I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I feel like it's the older you get, the more people you know who have died. Maybe you've had a health scare yourself, and you start to realize this is all temporary. You're lucky to be here, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think almost like maybe all of us are, there's a baby visiting us in the park. Hi. She can be on the show, but the pacifier has to come out. So you're kind of raised, right, in this life as though things are permanent, right? You're kind of raised as though you're never, right? Like as if, you know, you got to be on a certain path, you got to follow certain rules, you got to, right?
Yeah.
And to some extent that's true. I mean, nobody, you don't want to be a selfish jerk, but then as you get older, you realize, like, going outside the lines usually doesn't have very big consequences. Often it's what makes you feel most kind of alive to life.
Well, yeah, because you trust your gut more.
Yeah.
You trust your gut. Because you also have some experience behind it.
Well, and I know that a mistake's not going to be fatal.
Yeah, because you have that experience to know that if you mess up, you just pick up. It's not like, you know, when you're younger, it's like, what college should I go to or something? And you feel like it's the biggest decision in the entire world, and your whole life's going to be messed up if you don't
feel
pick
like
right.
That?
It doesn't matter.
Or to put it in cook terms, you know, I've had young cooks start jobs, and they're, I mean, yes, I believe you should stick it out, but sometimes you got to work for a psycho.
Yeah,
you don't need to work,
for
a psycho.
Yeah.
You don't need to stay with a psycho for that year that everyone talks about.
Right.
And I've told young friends of mine, like, look, if it is as bad as what you're saying, just leave. I know you think that means you're going to be blackballed across the world.
Yeah.
But the truth is, they're not going to remember you in a week.
Right. And I think it's one of those things, if someone has one little blip on their record, and like they have three jobs that they stayed an appropriate amount of time, and they have one that didn't, it's like, oh, something didn't work there.
Right.
And you don't hold it against the person that's looking for the job. You may be curious about it, but you just know that that's an odd thing.
Yeah.
An odd thing. So.
Okay. Well, I can't quote the subtitle, so I'm going to say the title, and then you do the subtitle. So once again, the book is, so who's counting?
The little quote book about growing older and still kicking ass.
And it is by you, Emily Luchetti,
and
your
Aaron
co-writer,
McHugh.
Aaron McHugh.
Yep.
Thanks for visiting.
Oh,
thanks,
my pleasure.
Thanks for coming out on this.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day in Madison Square Park.
Well, it is blazing hot today.
It is
one
hot,
of those.
You know,
it's one
hey,
of those
if I was
days.
In San Francisco, it'd be foggy and 60 degrees. So
I have a friend who used to say days like this reminded him of... when you see a documentary about overpopulation, like that's what it feels like in the streets of New York.
Because everybody's outside. No one wants to go to their hot, stuffy apartment.
All
that's
right, great to see you.
Okay, good
and
to see
we'll
you.
We'll meet up again maybe at the end of the summer or
early
fall.
I would love it.
Okay.
I'm around. Okay, bye.
And that's our show for this week. A huge thank you again to Emily Luchetti. And again, her book is written with Aaron McHugh, the title, So Who's Counting? The Little Quote Book About Growing Older and Still Kicking Ass. It is available wherever books are sold. And Emily, I will reach out to you and we will do a full biographical interview sometime, I hope, in the year 2020. Thank you, as always, to our engineer, David Tatasciore, for splicing these things together. Thanks to all of you out there in podcast land for listening, and we will see you back here soon with another episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs.